Welcome back, GGP gang. Tonight we're joined with Tina from Ghost Tracks. Everybody say hi to Tina.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. How are you guys doing tonight? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. So we just got to record a fun episode over on Ghost Tracks with Tina. Tell everybody what Ghost Tracks is.
So Ghost Tracks podcast was started in January of 25, and I just kind of talk about hauntings, ghost theories, history, a little bit of everything, really. There's no rhyme or reason over there, but I do paranormal investigations as well. So I also go over with my investigative team what we discovered, what evidence we gathered while we were out in the field. So those are pretty common episodes in there here, especially here recently. We have some more upcoming investigations, so we'll have some more of those here in the future.
How fun. So how long have you been investigating?
So my very first investigation was back in, I think, 22, like official investigation. Obviously, I used to go to like abandoned places all the time when I was much younger. But that one, we had actually had a tornado come through in the middle of the night prior. And it was 2-3 miles from our house. And one of the girls that went with me, actually, her house got hit by the tornado. So we actually did not stay the whole night because none of us had slept and we had worked that day. So that location was Whispers Estate. So my current investigative team and I are planning on getting out to that location again here soon so that I can do like an actual overnight. But September of last year was like my official, like, both feet on the ground, we're doing this. And I think we've been to about 7 or 8 places so far, so...
And I see you're fixing to go to Waverly, right?
We just went to Waverly. Yep. Oh. It was intense. It was so big. And then on a whim, my mother and I went to Harper's Ferry because she's here visiting. So that's in West Virginia. And we were driving and we went through Allegheny County. And I was like, hold on a minute. And so then I looked up and we were pretty close to Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. So we swung in there on the way back home and did a daytime paranormal investigation, like tour there. Yeah. And that place was cool. So
that is awesome. And how crazy. So you don't know what story we're doing tonight.
No.
The story we're doing happened in West Virginia.
Oh, that's crazy.
I love West Virginia. It's so... I've spent very little time in West Virginia. A lot of it's just like passing through, going to other places. I love to travel. But gosh, every time I go there, I'm like, this is the prettiest darn place I've ever seen. And there's so many like creepy, spooky things here. And in November, I'm actually going back to West Virginia because Mothman. So.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So jealous.
I am. I was like, I can't. I will not leave 2026 without my hands touching the butt. Like, it's just, it's got to happen. I won't survive if I don't.
And don't they do a Mothman festival there?
Yes, that's in September, actually. I think it's the last week of September, maybe. But it is coming up. And I did think about maybe, like, trying to get out there for that. But it's ill people. And I wouldn't want to be down there with that many.
Yeah. That's like, I so bad want to go to Salem. Yes. But I would really like to experience it during Halloween, but oh my right. gosh, maybe just not.
A massive amount of people. I think.
Yeah.
So I grew up on the East Coast, but I've actually never been to Massachusetts. There's only a handful of states that I've never been to. And that's one of them. So my spooky heart is very sad because I've never been to Salem. But I think going there would be amazing, really, in any season. So I hear, obviously, if you don't like snow, probably not. But an East Coast winter is very cool. Mm-hmm. They have a decent amount of snow on the East Coast. So, like, getting to see that and walk the streets and listen to how quiet everything is. And then just Salem itself being under snowfall, I think would be really, really pretty. So, yeah. But no, I understand wanting to be there during spooky season for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe one day.
The amount of people that would be there visiting would just be crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. It's intense. I've seen, like, obviously, like, the videos and stuff like that when they're out there for around Halloween. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think the whole Eastern Seaboard is there in that one
That's
town.
What it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, we had gone to the Covered Bridge Festival that happens here in Indiana. And it's a culmination of multiple bridges. But the main bridge is in Park County. I don't know exactly which one it is. But that's where they have, like, all of the festival tents and this, that, and the next thing. Oh, my God. I'd never been. My investigative team had never been. So we were like, we're going to go. It'll be so much fun. We were like, I didn't know all of Indiana was going to be in this one, concentrated little place. It was, you could not walk. There were so many people. Wow. We left. We were like, bye.
That's enough. Been here, seen it, got the t-shirt, time to go.
Yeah. Saw the Covered Bridge. Now we're going to go to Billy Creek, which I had talked about earlier. They have two covered bridges at the Billy Creek Village location. That's part of that festival, but it was so much more calm and just not a lot of people. And there's ghosts there, so
yeah.
I'd rather be there.
That's right.
So we did. It closed out. It was a nice time, but yeah, beginning was a little rough.
Yeah, I could only imagine. Well, did you have any questions?
You asked all my questions.
Oh, I asked them. Sorry. I called it. Well, speaking of ghosts, so when we started talking, you said you deal with all the ghosts. You don't. Yeah. Are you a true crime enthusiast at all?
Oh, yes. No, I love true crime as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. And I had actually, when I was, formulating, I wanted to start a podcast, and I knew that. And it was between true crime and the ghosty stuff. Ghosties just kind of won out. But I had toyed with, doing kind of a together one, and that I just, my brain at the time just couldn't, work it out, I guess, logistically. So, I just settled with the spooky.
Well, since you are a paranormal investigator, I thought it would be fun to bring you a story that had a little bit of both true crime and paranormal.
Perfect.
So, we are going to travel to the quiet hills of Greenbrier County, West Virginia, where a young woman's mysterious death in 1897 would become one of the most haunting stories in American folklore. When Elva Zona Heaster Shue was found dead in her home, the initial investigation seemed pretty straightforward.
That's a hell of a name.
It's a hell of a name. So we're going to call her Zona. So she goes by Zona. Heaster is her maiden name, and then Shue was her married name.
What an unfortunate married name, you poor lady.
Just wait to hear what her husband was called. Well, once she was found dead, her mother, Mary Jane Heaster, claimed that Zona's spirit had returned to reveal the identity of her killer. What followed was a remarkable investigation, a shocking accusation, and a courtroom case unlike almost any other in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, so, dun. in Greenbrier, Greenbrier County, West Virginia, was actually established in 1778. And again, that blows my mind to think something existed back then. Like, I just can't fathom it.
When we were driving through West Virginia, we had hit, on our way down, it took us into Maryland, which I didn't actually know we were going to hit. We actually hit six states on the way down from Indiana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, I didn't even know we were going through two of these. Like, how did we get here? but yeah, Maryland, I think the earliest, I think we had seen like a 1730 or 40 or something. It was like
crazy.
Way before like America was even America. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I just, the East Coast is so rich with history. Like,
yes.
And I didn't appreciate it growing up, but just the dates that exist over there are insane. Yeah. So, and I can't wait to get overseas. So I'm actually from England. I was born overseas. And so I want to be back overseas. You know, then you've got things from like the 1500s. And that's just mind blowing to even think that those things are still in existence and standing and that we can see them with our own eyes. So,
And to stand in that spot where, you know, the 1500s, it's like, okay, what happened in this spot? Like, what happened right here?
Lots and lots of death.
Yes, back then. Oh, yes.
Well, in 1863, during the Civil War, West Virginia separated from Virginia and became a state. Greenbrier County was among the region's earliest counties and lies in the valleys of the Appalachian Mountains. During the 19th century, the area was largely rural, consisting of farms, small settlements, churches, and kind of scattered communities. In 1870, Jacob Hedges Heaster, these names in the story, man. So Jacob Hedges Heaster and Mary Jane Heaster married, and then they started their family in Meadow Bluff. And that is another area of Greenbrier County. And there are a few different records say a few different things. They kind of differ on the number of children that the Heasters had. But according to the 1880 U.S. Census, Jacob, 32, Mary Jane, 30, were living with four children. There was 8-year-old Alfred, 7-year-old Zona, 6-year-old John, and a 3-month-old Lewis. And again, to be able to look at those records from the 1800s is so cool. So cool.
Yeah.
Other genealogical research indicates that Jacob and Mary Jane may have had additional children after that census was done. Mm-hmm. And with the family eventually consisting of about a total of 7 children.
No, thank
you. That's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of kids. It's like my mom and her
sisters. I don't
sign
up for that.
No, thank you.
My stepmom's family, there's like, I think 2 of her aunts had 12 kids apiece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, my ovaries would have divorced my body on their own.
My mind would have just
vacated. Their stuff and left.
There's no way.
No.
Yeah. No, thank you. Well, it should also be noted that Zona's birth year is also often disputed. So the 1880 census lists Zona as being 7 years old, meaning her birth year was around 1873. But other sources have it listed as 1876, meaning that she may have actually been around 23 to 24 when she died, rather than 20 to 21. So depending on the source, early 20s is when she died.
Records were so hard to keep back then, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So.
And that's not the only instance in the story. There's another one that will come later on where it's kind of debated, and I think it was like, It was a mistake on the record, but they don't know, was it this part that was a mistake or was it this record that was a mistake?
Right.
The Heaster family was a very tight-knit farming family. Zona was described as a brown-eyed, pretty, vivacious, and well-liked young woman. She was especially close to her mother, Mary Jane, who was a devout Christian. As the only daughter, Zona was also the focus of her brother's affection and protection. The family attended church together every Sunday and were deeply connected to their faith and their small rural community. When Zona was just 16 years old, she met a boy. Isn't that how all the stories go? I met a boy.
Girl, run.
Run away. Well, she met George Wooldridge in town while her brothers were headed to the general store.
Definitely lurking. No, you had it right.
Oh, my goodness. He was working at the local mill, and the two instantly hit it off. They began making special trips to town just so they could see each other, and soon they began dating. And in 1895, Zona would become pregnant. But what's crazy is even, you know, you think the 1800s, and it used to be back then, an unwed mother was not accepted. Mm-hmm. It was not okay. Well, these families were pretty progressive, I guess, for their time, because the couple never got married after she got pregnant, and families agreed that was the best option for them. And they kind of made this arrangement where George would pay for child support and he would have visitation with the child. And they were still dating during this time, so it's not like they went their separate ways, mm-hmm. but the families kind of decided it was best for them not get married yet. Let's just figure this out.
Right.
So very, very odd for that time.
Darn, back in 2005 when I had my daughter, I was not allowed to go to church because I was not married and I was pregnant and 17 and that was not okay.
I can feel that. I got pregnant at 17 as well and I got some looks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they wanted me to marry her dad and I was like, why? We'll just be divorced in like a year. Like, what is the point of that? So it worked out though.
It all works out. Well, on November 29th of that year, Zona would give birth to a baby boy, but sadly he would pass away shortly after. So even though
having kids back then was just so difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even though her family was pretty ahead of their time, you still have the church over here. And the church is like, mm-hmm. they're not married. She's an unwed mother. So we're not going to allow the baby to be buried in our cemetery. So the Heaster family actually buried the baby on their land. So good. I don't want my baby there anyways.
Right. Take your church business elsewhere.
That's right. After the death of her son, grief really overtook Zona, and she no longer joined her brothers on their trips to town. She became very depressed, and George and Zona grew apart about a year later. Gotcha. Sadly, George would marry another woman pretty quickly after they lost their baby. Like, within the next year, he was already married to somebody else.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Zona's family said she never really recovered from the loss of her child. And, of course, not only did she lose her baby, she also lost her first love. And it just really kind of, she started spiraling after that. She really didn't go out much. She just kind of stayed home and kind of just became a homebody. She just didn't want to get out. She didn't really get out of bed much. She just really kind of lost herself for a while.
All normal reactions to those things, I think.
I couldn't imagine having to move on with that. That would be awful.
Yeah.
It's a lot of trauma in a short time. And then to be the age that she was. And
16, 17. Yeah. I mean, I could not imagine.
I was a mess. I was emotional. I was a wreck. I can't imagine back then.
Yeah. But eventually, Zona did start accompanying her brothers again on trips to town here and there, and she kind of slowly started rebuilding her life again. Soon, Zona would meet Edward Shue, who was an apprentice blacksmith that was working for, actually, at this point, I don't think he was working for his father any longer. So he was a blacksmith at this point.
Shoeing horses, probably. That's where the name
came from. As the last name says.
Oh, just wait. So his real name was actually Erasmus Stribling Shue.
What?
But he was going by Edward.
How the hell did you
pronounce
that?
Did they just
that?
Like write these down and like Yahtzee it? Just,
yeah, like I need a vowel here.
Toss it all out.
Consonant here. Okay, now what do we got?
A cup full of letters and they dump it on the
yes.
table.
Erasmus.
I think that's what they do with medication names too. That's what yeah. I tell my patients is they yeah. just Yahtzee and
whatever comes out, that's what you got.
Yep.
Well, he was born in 1861, and he was one of nine children.
Mm-mm.
Nine children.
What were the other crazy-ass names?
I don't know.
Right?
But it's fixing to get even crazier, because in his childhood, he was given the nickname Trout.
Trout Shue?
Trout, like the fish. Trout.
Where did they come up with trout out of Erasmus?
Probably
like how
to pronounce.
I want to know, I want to see the board with the strings, how that came to be.
How do you go from Erasmus to
trout?
That just doesn't, it doesn't make sense.
I think that was an I Spy game and they just rolled with it.
They went with it.
Well, yep. Troy calls Jackson Catfish.
That is true. So my dad calls our son Catfish and.
I love it.
So, and it. He's the only one that calls him Catfish, but he knows when he hears Catfish, Poppy's that's, calling.
Mm-hmm. My best friend's name is Minnow.
Yeah.
That's not Minnow? Her name, but that's what she's called, Minnow.
Oh, okay.
I actually, that's funny. So they live in Alaska. She lives in Alaska with her family. And Alaska is wild. So it's not beyond somebody actually having the name Minnow out there, but
yeah.
I did not know for a very long time that that was not actually her like government name. And so now when I know her government name, if somebody calls her that, I'm like, no, that's not her name.
Yeah.
I need you to stop right now. Yeah. You're making me mad.
That's funny.
That is funny. I had a nickname growing up and everybody called me that. And when people hear my real name, they're like, who is that?
Who?
Who's that? Yeah. Yeah. Same thing. Well, according to Dancy Richmond, author of the Greenbrier Ghost Chronicles,
that's a name too.
Nancy Richmond. Yeah.
Greenbrier
Ghost Chronicles. Yeah. That was a tongue twister. And according to her, he would be completely spoiled by his mother and siblings because he had a delicate personality.
Mm.
Wah, wah.
Some of those.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Zona was immediately attracted to him. He was known to be loud but charming. And even though he was known to have a temper, he would really draw people in with his stories. So he was a really good storyteller. But that's all they were stories. There was no truth to them at all.
We call that narcissism now.
Thank you. Just wait. You're on the right track.
I've known some people like that.
Uh-huh.
Trout would use this to his advantage, and he became a very successful blacksmith. And soon, Zona would be making special trips to go visit Trout, and she seemed like she was kind of finding her light again. And out of curiosity, Zona's mom and dad decided to go to town. They're like, who is this guy that's, you know, making our daughter so happy? He's got to be great. Immediately, mom and dad clocked him. Don't like him. Don't know what it is about him. Don't like him.
Poor mama.
Yeah. Listen to your mama.
Mm-hmm.
They said he was loud. He was egotistical. He flirted with other girls that were way too young for him. And mama immediately did not like him. And she was very put off, and she felt like he was really hiding something. Yeah. They tried to kind of forbid Zona from seeing him, but she's just a young teenage girl, and what are you going to do? As soon as your mom says you can't see this guy, you're immediately going to go see this
challenge
guy.
Accepted.
Exactly. And so she continued to see him, and Trout almost seemed to love the fact that her parents did not like him, because of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he would eventually convince Zona to run away so that they could get married behind their parents' backs. Mm. And again, Zona's finding her light. She's happy. He's just this great guy. And so she agrees. And so the couple would secretly get married on October 20th, 1896, without telling anybody. She made her own dress, but due to her already having a child previously, of course, she couldn't wear white, so she made it of like a deep red color with a high neck, and it was like covered in lace, which sounds like a beautiful, beautiful dress.
Yeah.
They would then return to town and move into a home that Trout was renting, and the families would find out about the secret wedding. And of course, they're mad. They're angry. They're like, what did you do? I can't believe you did this. And of course, this kind of added strain to Zona and her mom's relationship. Even though they were so close, her mom wanted what was best for her. And so it really kind of created this strain between Zona and Mary Jane. Zona would soon find herself unhappy in the marriage. So this once funny, charming man became very aggressive, very demanding. And because of the secret wedding, Zona's kind of isolated. She doesn't really have her family to lean on at this point. And she was completely unaware at this point that she was actually Trout's third wife. And he had a very checkered past.
Hmm.
Not honey. Looking good. On Christmas Eve of 1885, Trout married his first wife, Allie Cutlip, a beautiful young girl, and immediately after the wedding, he became very abusive. He would often leave home for days at a time, cheating on her. She wouldn't know where he was at. She would eventually give birth to their daughter, Gerda, who they called Gertie, in February of 1887.
Gertie is way prettier than Gerda.
Gertie's so cute.
That's actually my car's name.
Oh, really?
Her name is Gertrude, but we call her Dirty Gertie.
There you go.
Love it. Love it.
I had a Tahoe once that I called the Dirty White Hoe.
Yeah.
My other car, my car that I drive full time now, his name is Jailbird Johnny. Because I helped a friend of mine, their child, get him. I co-signed like a dum-dum and ended up being repossessed. And he spent some time in the slammer from the repossession, and I had to spring him out, and now he's here and living a much better life. He's gotten his act together.
He's reformed.
But because of his stint on the inside, his name is Jailbird Johnny.
I love it. That is hilarious. Well, after giving birth in February of 1887, in 1888, after Gerda's first birthday, Trout would kick his wife and baby out. So your little 1-year-old baby and your wife, and you're just like, this is in West Virginia during the winter, and kicks him out.
Wow. His mama didn't spank him enough.
Obviously not.
Well, when Allie refused to leave, he packed up all of their things, threw them outside, and at this point, he was struggling financially. And he knew that he couldn't ask his dad for help because his dad is like, boy, get your shit together. Like, come on now. And would hold him accountable.
Not accountability.
Don't what? You love it? Crazy.
Throw the whole man away.
All of it. That we would have been a lot better off if he would have just started.
I feel like
that.
Some of the other women would have had a much better time in life.
Yeah. Well, in 1888, after kicking his wife and daughter out, he would be arrested for horse theft, which is a very 1800s crime.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me go steal a horse.
Horse wrangling.
I don't know. I'd steal a cow. Yeah. But you didn't hear me say that here.
I would do that just so we could eat.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah, what do you mean? It was just out there by itself. It looked lonely and cold.
Yeah. We brought it inside.
I put it in the back of Jailbird Johnny and we took off.
You know, we actually covered a story. Do you know the story of Ken McElroy?
I don't think so, no.
He was a town bully and this whole town gathered together and basically had this whole secret meeting and they all decided to kill him, but they all shot at him so that they could not prove who shot this man. We did an episode on him. You'll have to go see it or go listen to
it. You're going to be really, so really good. Hated if a whole town was shooting at you.
Yeah. It was so bad. But what, some of his earlier crimes, he like redid his truck, like did some adjustments to it. And he would go to people's houses and steal a cow and throw it in the back of his truck and drive off.
Listen, I'm just saying, Johnny's built for crime, clearly. That's there why you his go. Name is his name. And he and I yeah.
You could at least get a mini cow in there, right?
Look, I'm Scottish, okay? I need a Highland cow. A
Highland cow, yes. There you go,
and I'm broke. You're not using it?
Let's go. Well, for the horse theft, he would spend about 2 years in prison for the crime. While he was in prison, he continued his blacksmith work, and Allie would take that chance, and she's like, I'm filing for divorce. Forget this guy.
Mm-hmm. Go off, queen.
Go do it. She stated that he, quote, he without any cause abandoned and deserted me. He moved out when Gertie was about a year old. So she was like, he left us. He kicked us out. I just need to go. And the divorce was granted. She did get it.
Good.
Good for her.
And she ditched him. She's like, I'm gone. Not another word. Then, once released on December 20th, 1890, he continued his blacksmith work in Pocahontas County. And in 1894, 33-year-old Trout, now going by Edward to hide his criminal past, would meet 23-year-old Lucy Ann Tritt.
Well, you got to change your name because a name like Trout is going to follow you everywhere.
Lots of
I don't
fishy
know
man
anybody
Trout.
With that name.
Fishman Trout over there. And this is where that age discrepancy happens again. So if you look at her birth and death certificate, this girl would have been 23. 23 and 33, that's still kind of a difference in age, but not horrible. But if you go by the marriage certificate, the age on that, Lucy would have only been 16 years old at the time, according to that.
Why are people so gross?
Yeah.
Times were different back then.
Times were different.
That
still
is very
really
true.
Gross.
Yes. Actually, I think there was a case not too long ago. Mother had signed off on a marriage at 15. Mm. Her daughter was 15. I was like, hell no.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, like there's states still that like 16 is the legal age of consent.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. Gross.
I think there's some even marriages as young as like 12 or not 12, but like 13 or 14 in some states.
Wow.
And I'm like, heck no. Here in the US, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross. Is that just like old laws that just haven't changed?
Haven't changed with the times yet? I don't know. That might be interesting to look into.
Yeah.
That actually might be a fun episode, is like old crazy laws around the United States.
I'm sure there's plenty of them. Arkansas's got some good ones.
Yeah, they've got some crazy ones.
There's some down here in Texas that are questionable too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
That might be fun. Let's see here. Where were we? Trout and Lucy would get married on June 23rd, 1894, just 8 months later. The marriage would end in a tragedy. One day, Trout climbed on the roof of their home to repair some storm damage.
What, he swim his way up there?
Yep, he just swam on up there. On February 1st, 1895, so he claimed that he was fixing their chimney after a really rough winter. He was tossing bricks off the roof when Lucy came outside to bring him a glass of water as he was tossing bricks off the roof, striking Lucy in the head and killing her accidentally.
Mm. Highly suspect, Trout.
Mm. Little Stethus was suspicious.
There's some holes in that story.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's what Lucy's family said. They're like, there's got to be more to the story. So they went to the sheriff and they're like, look, this guy's kind of a piece of shit. Like, can we kind of at least look at it a little bit?
Just a little bit.
Just check it a little bit. And the sheriff would ultimately start questioning and seeing if he could gather any evidence, but the case would ultimately be dropped since there were no other witnesses to support what happened other than an accident. So Trout never showed any sadness or remorse for the death of his wife.
He don't say.
It gets better. He would even be heard telling people in town that he's not upset because he's supposed to have 7 wives in his lifetime. So no worries. That's just the second one. He's still got however 5 more to go.
That's some really sick thinking.
Ugh. Some people, I'm telling you.
It's insane.
Like, how do you the wake
audacity
up one day and go,
of some people.
You know what? I think I need 7 wives.
You know, one for each personality, husband, I guess.
Maybe so.
My husband can't handle me.
Yeah, me either.
6 others. Yeah.
I can't keep up with this one.
Yeah, let alone having kind, a few more. Yeah, we keep. Yeah, it's never so. Boring.
No, it's definitely. I don't think frustrating is the right word, but it's close.
It's real close.
It's close. You're on to something.
Well, Trout would then move to Greenbrier County to work as a blacksmith for a man named James Cruikshank.
These have got to be made-up names.
Got to be. And that's where Zona would actually meet him as while he was working there.
With the Cruikshanks?
With the Cruikshank.
Mm. Cruikshanks. See, I would have just stayed clear of that just because of the name.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's gotta be a red flag.
Like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the red flag guy from TikTok?
Yeah, he should be running right on across there.
I have no idea what that is.
You're not on TikTok. He's not on
you
TikTok.
You don't know who that is? No.
I'll have to
What's
show
his
you.
Name?
He's
Dustin
funny.
Pointer.
Something like
he's
that.
He's hilarious.
He is.
He's still, like the biggest red and green flags ever. Yeah. And he, depending on the video, he employs the correct flag.
we'll have to have a little.
He's funny. See. I love him.
If I watch videos, I'm kind of a YouTube snob.
I think he's on there too.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Just not an algorithm.
Yeah, probably not. Most of mine's just like cars and
cars. Cars. Yeah. And cooking.
Yeah, cooking. Gordon Ramsay especially.
Yeah.
I love Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we're back to Zona. She's stuck in this marriage with a man that she doesn't truly know because she has no idea about his past life. He's completely isolated her from her family at this point. He's completely changed from what she thought he was. And to top it off, after just 3 months of marriage, Zona thinks that she might be pregnant. She had been checked by a doctor, and he told her it was too early to tell, but it's definitely a possibility. And this almost brought a little bit of glimmer of hope to Zona. She's kind of excited about it. And according to Trout, he would normally go home a few times a day for lunch to get, like, snacks or, go home for lunch and snacks, and he would just go randomly. And on this specific day, he supposedly could not do that. Trout would go across the street to Reuben and Martha Jones's house across from the blacksmith shop, and they had a son named Andy Jones. most normal name in this entire story, Andy Jones.
Yeah, seriously.
Andy Jones.
They ran out of crazy names.
Yeah.
That's the name that's really made up.
Yeah, that's the fake
rest
one.
Of them are real.
Yep. That one's fake, for sure.
Well, he was a very responsible 11-year-old boy, and he was known to do, like, odd jobs around the community for people, and he had actually done some work for Trout and Zona before.
Sounds like he grew up poor. I know the struggle.
Yeah.
Also seems made up, because where's the responsibility in any of these stories so far?
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, he told the Joneses that Zona wasn't feeling well that day, and Trout was asking Andy if he could stop by and just check on her and help her with a few things since she wasn't feeling very well. And Andy's mom and Andy were like, yeah, not a big deal. I can do that, but I've got these other errands that I've got to do first, so it might be a minute before I can get over there. And Trout acted almost irritated, like, why can't you just do it now? And he's like, well, I've got other jobs. I'm an 11-year-old boy, and I got some jobs, and I can't until later. Like,
I got work to do.
Simmer down. Just simmer down.
Take a seat, sir.
That's right. And so eventually Trout was like, okay, great, not a big deal. And so there were even some other sources. So Trout, you know, made this big deal that he couldn't go home to check on his wife. But he ended up going back to the Joneses' house a couple of times that day just to see if Andy had gone to check on his wife yet. Like, by the time you've done all that, couldn't you have just walked home and
just
checked
gone home
on her?
At least once.
Yeah.
Right. Nah, he didn't need to find the body himself.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That would look suspicious.
Yeah, right. you can't be the
fishy,
one that
found him. Fishy, you might say.
You might be a little trout, a little trouty. Andy would eventually make his way to Zona and Trout's house, and immediately he's like, vibes are off. Something's off. She was nowhere to be seen. And as he's walking up the front door, he noticed that there's a few blood droplets on the front step. After knocking a few times and not getting an answer, he decided to enter the home. There were more blood drops leading through the dining room, where he would find Zona on the floor.
Poor kid.
And to see,
you're gonna send an 11-year-old boy to a house to find a dead body. Like,
opened all this trauma for this poor child who was just trying to make a little bit of money doing side jobs, and you just done this to him. And
the lowliest of low, this man.
Well, Andy approached Zona. Her eyes were open, and when he reached down to check her body, she was cold. And so he, of course, being an 11-year-old boy, ran to go tell his mom what he found, and he told her that Zona was on the floor, stretched out, her feet perfectly together, one of her hands laid next to her side, and the other was across her body. He also mentioned that her head was resting at an angle to one side. And so Martha would go across the street. She would tell Trout, hey, this is what we found. All of them ran back to the house, and they seen Zona exactly how Andy described.
What did he do? Roll up there like, oh, no.
What happened?
Oh, my word. Oh, my Lanta. How'd this happen? I had no idea.
Surprise.
Right.
Oh, wrong party.
Right.
Whoopsies. Well, Martha and Andy, they would end up going to town to get Dr. Knapp, which is the one that...
I think it was a little late for that.
it's a permanent nap at this point. Yep. And he's the one that actually came and seen Zona to decide if she was pregnant or not. So he's very familiar with them. And he was like the county doctor, so he was kind of busy himself. It was a few hours before he could get to the house to see her. And so he didn't arrive until about 2 p.m. When he got there, he discovered that Trout had gone against town tradition of the townswomen preparing the body, and he had carried Zona upstairs, bathed her, and dressed her in her dark red, high-collared wedding dress that she made, and he also placed a black veil over her face. That's pretty normal. I mean, pretty straightforward.
Oh, Trout. You disappoint me, man. You disappoint me.
Well, Dr. Knapp began trying to examine the body. He's like, you know, I got a job to do. Let me take a look at her. But Trout became very agitated. He even threatened Dr. Knapp as the doctor tried to examine her neck. And Trout began cradling Zona, refusing to let the doctor to even touch her. He was aggressively sobbing and just going ballistic. And so the doctor's like, okay, this man is obviously grieving his wife. And things were a little bit different back then. You didn't want to impose on anybody. You didn't want to ruffle any feathers.
I do.
He should have. He probably should have.
I will ruffle the whole bird if I need to.
Well, this is very interesting. So Dr. Knapp, he ended up ruling her death as everlasting faint, which was a heart attack back then. A very fancy way of saying heart attack.
I think they should have kept it that way.
Okay. I think so, too. It's right? pretty glamorous.
It's a lot more pretty than
it would look real
attack.
Good on paper.
Yeah. Yeah. He would later change it to complications from childbirth or miscarriage, since he thought that she was pregnant before
this. Did she miscarry herself?
I guess so. Right on. We'll get there. We'll get there.
I don't understand that rule.
Well, I think his thought process, because he really never got to examine the body because he got Mr. Fishy over here freaking out. Mm-hmm. She thought she was pregnant. You know, you got to keep your...
That begs another question. How the hell did they know you were pregnant back then?
I don't know. I mean, he didn't rule her pregnant. He was just like, it's too early to tell, but it's definitely a possibility, so...
I don't know when, like... these things happen, but like your cervix actually changes colors and stuff when you get pregnant, like very early on. But I don't know when like pelvic exams began being like a thing. I don't know any of that stuff, but
or like a chainsaw,
yes, the cervix does change.
Yeah, that
and stuff,
is so disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen Bodies. That? Have you seen the chainsaw thing?
I don't think
so. Do you know why a chainsaw was invented?
Nope.
To aid in childbirth. That's why a chainsaw.
Well, that makes
was
complete sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like the most brutal.
What were they?
Possible
what were they
way.
Trying to accomplish with this?
I don't want
the
to
worst
know.
Episiotomy known to man.
That would be awful. Awful. Right. Insane.
And like it was a hand cranked one too.
That's enough of that. I don't need that picture in my mind.
It's so weird, the things that we've came up with over. That's like a torture device.
Yeah, but, I mean, women back then, like, you were just
crazy.
Did you
ever look into the treatment options for tuberculosis that took place in, like, Waverly Hills?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just listening to your podcast earlier today about, you were talking about some of that stuff.
Yeah, insane.
I probably listened to four or five episodes today.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, the forced pneumothorax and all that. I was like, I like logically, like I can see where they were going with it, like at the time, and you know, but at the same time, I'm like, that's the best you could come up with.
Yeah,
to
seriously.
Collapse a whole lung.
Yeah,
to remove ribs, to crush your whole what?
Yeah,
or right. This one needs a nap, so we're gonna.
Even like lobotomies, like, okay, so there's something wrong with your brain, so how about we poke a hole in it?
Sure. So we're just going to stick something in there and scramble it around.
That'll make it better.
That'll absolutely fix it.
Mm-hmm. Scramble those thoughts you're having.
Insane.
Oh, God. They do enough of that all on their own. I don't need a nice pick to help.
Don't need any help with that. Seriously. Well, Zona's family would be notified of her death, and they, of course, were absolutely devastated. Her mother took the news the hardest, and even though their relationship had been strained recently, they were still very close. Zona's body would be placed in a coffin and then taken to the Heaster family farm. That morning, they had a funeral, and then they would have the wake later that evening. At the wake, Trout refused to let anyone near Zona's body. He even stuffed a pillow and sheets around her head, telling everybody it made her more comfortable.
Yeah. And this would have been before they started embalming people, right?
Yes, I will. We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. He even tied a scarf around her neck, saying it was her favorite scarf and she specifically asked to be buried with it. Sure she did, buddy.
A wedding dress and a scarf.
Yeah.
Cute.
Right? Yeah. Well, as the night went on, many family members and friends began nodding off. It's a long day. And Trout was, like, standing at attention by her casket, not letting anybody near her head. And then the next day, she would be buried in the cemetery of the Heaster family's church. And before they buried her, her mother wanted to give her one last goodbye. She gave her a kiss on the cheek and then removed the sheet and pillow that was placed around her head. And when she removed the items, Zona's head kind of tilted, or I guess kind of shifted. But her mom really didn't think anything of it. She's like, it's just her head's just settling is all that is. She would then ask Trout if he wanted to keep the sheet and pillow. And Trout was like, ugh. No, like, disgusting. like, almost acted appalled that she would ask him this.
That she touched a, like, whole dead human that I murdered.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't need that juju over here.
Right.
And depending on how long she'd been on that, you can only imagine what it smelled like.
Well, you're probably not wrong.
Yeah.
They then began covering the coffin with dirt, and as soon as the last bit of dirt was placed, Trout just kind of took a deep breath, almost like he's letting out some relief, and just skedaddled right on out of there. He's like, she's buried. I'm done. Got to go.
Toodles.
Mary then took the sheet back home to wash it, and it turned the water pink, and then, of course, it stained the sheet pink.
Hmm.
She's like, this is weird. And I never really found out why, like, what caused that. Because it didn't say, like, there was blood stains on it or anything. But it is strange, especially with the events that are fixing to happen. Very odd.
Right.
Then, the following four nights, Mary Jane would have what she later described as a waking nightmare. And it's funny, we talked about this kind of stuff on your podcast just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
I foreshadowed for us.
There's a lot of, like, synchronicity between the two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary Jane would have later described it was a waking nightmare. Zona would come to her mom during these dreams and tell her that Trout killed her. Mary Jane said at first she would present herself as, like, a bright ball of light, and it would almost just, like, become more intense until she could see the full figure of her daughter. Mm-hmm. And most of the time she would be seen in her wedding dress, kind of had a very sad look on her face. Mary Jane would go on to say, like, she had a whole, like, conversations with her daughter in this apparition. Yeah. Could even touch her daughter at some points because it was just so intense.
Yeah.
And during one of these dreams, Mary had been laying on Zona's bed in her bedroom, and she said dreams, but she was awake. She was actually awake. She was praying, asking for answers to what really happened to Zona. When Zona appeared and said that on the day of her death, she, in fact, had not been feeling well. She told her mom that she knew she had to prepare a meal for Trout, even though she wasn't feeling well. Otherwise, he would be the jackass that he was and hurt her or attack her. So she decided to gather up some fruit. She got some butter, some preserves, some bread, and was like, okay, this is all the energy that I have. At least it's something. And when he came home, he was furious that there was not any meat included with his meal.
She should have cooked fish for him.
Yeah. He would then go into an absolute rage, and Zona said he started ripping, like, I think she called it her pretties off the wall. So, like, her little knickknacks and decorations off the wall. He then started destroying them. He would start choking her until to the point where blood was started coming out of her mouth. And this is what Zona is telling her mother. She would also say that Trout removed her blood-stained dress and he had hidden it around Martha Jones's house. She also told her mother to check a certain corner of the dining room in the house again because they would find more blood there. She also told them to check. There was a certain field with a fence, and she's like, you need to go check that area as well. And Mary Jane was getting just a little bit more information every time Zona would visit her. On the final night, she appeared as Zona's apparition, and this would scare the absolute shit out of me. Zona's apparition looked at her mom and then turned around to walk away and stopped, and only her head turned around all the way around and looked at her mother almost like there was like no bones in her neck.
Yeah.
And then just dissipated, just disappeared.
Wow. Ugh.
Terrifying.
No thanks.
No. So by now, she's convinced that her daughter has been married or been murdered by Trout. And she, with the support of friends and family, so she went and told a few friends and family about these apparitions that she was seeing of her daughter. And they're like, okay, yeah. Trout is a shady character. You're having these apparitions. You need to tell somebody. So with support with her friends and family, she went to John Alford, and he was the Greenbrier County prosecuting attorney. She told him everything that she'd been seeing. Despite it sounding real, he did stay respectful, which again, ahead of the time back then, and just listened and asked her questions. He believed her. He then started assigning different deputies to interview different witnesses that Mary Jane had provided him. After finding out what the witnesses were saying about Trout, they also started to dig into his past, and that's when they found out about the little prison stint, his previous wives, and if you remember, now he's going by Edward, not Trout,
right,
or the other weird name, and he's trying to keep his past hidden. So once they find out about all of that, and they decided to go talk to Dr. Knapp. They're like, let's go talk to him, see what he says. And they discover that he was never able to complete a thorough examination of Zona's body. And so they decided to exhume Zona's body to complete an actual autopsy. Mary Jane gave the permission to do it. Trout's like, no, no way. We ain't doing it. And they said, sorry, Mr. Fish, we're doing it whether you want to or not. So let's see here. He had even said that he wasn't even going to go to the inquest. But then the deputies were like, you're looking really shady right now. And if you don't come to this, it's going to look even shadier. So maybe you should come.
Real mad.
Extra fishy.
So here's the even crazier part. On February 22nd, 1897, they exhumed Zona's body and completed the autopsy. Where, you may ask? A log cabin schoolhouse next to the cemetery.
What the fuck?
They had to cancel school that day. Push all the children's little desks together so they can lay her body across it to perform an autopsy.
Yep. That checks.
And we wonder why there's a bunch of Victorian ghosts walking around.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're starting to answer some of the questions we had earlier.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. In attendance were three doctors that were chosen to do the autopsy, one of them being George Knapp. There were also five men of the jury inquest and Justice Howland McClung. Trout was also in attendance, griping the entire time. He was even saying things like, oh, she fell down the stairs that day. And they're like, I thought you weren't there that day. So, like, what do you mean?
How convenient.
Wow. And Zona was not embalmed because that was before that time. But her body had been completely preserved due to freezing temperatures because of the time of year that she died.
Awesome.
So perfect storm for this.
Heck yeah.
It was so well preserved that her stomach contents were examined and confirmed that her last meal was fruit and preserves. How would her mother know that?
Yep. Right. That's crazy.
So she wasn't pregnant. And so they were able to rule that cause of death out. So they're like, she ain't pregnant. It wasn't because of that.
Right.
They then began to examine her neck. They removed the high collar. Her head would literally fall to the side, like literally just collapse to the side as soon as they removed the collar. And they were able to see bruises in the shape of fingers around her neck.
Hmm.
Like little fish fins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fish nibbles.
What?
Fish nibbles.
Oh, I thought you said fish nipples. I was like,
bro. Bro.
I didn't know fish had nipples.
No. You know, like when you're in the water and you can feel the little minnows biting you? That's what I was talking about. Not like, like little fish titties.
All I can think is meet the Fockers when he's like,
can you milk a fish?
Can you milk me?
Not the fish nipples. It's going to be put on a t-shirt now.
Yeah, fish nipples.
Merch design.
Her neck had been broken. The damage was so bad that her neck had been broken between the first and second vertebrae, which is right at the base of your neck. The ligaments in her neck were torn and ruptured, and it was so severe that her windpipe had been completely crushed.
Did he drop a single brick or the whole fucking chimney on her? Holy
no, this
hell.
Is a separate. This is wife number three. Yeah. This
oh,
is wife number
oh.
two.
I missed that,
yeah,
I guess.
This is the third wife.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what they said is most likely he strangled her. this is really dark. He strangled her, and once she collapsed, he probably used pressure with his knee, foot, something to cause that much damage. It wasn't just
holy hell
manual strangulation. Yeah.
There would have been no way.
Insane. They would then rule her cause of death as manual strangulation. And what do you think Trout did? He immediately yelled, they can't prove I did it.
I figured by this time he'd be gone.
Nope, he's still hanging in there.
They can't prove I did it. Honey, you're about to become a fish stick. You better shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
Well, Trout would be arrested immediately and charged with murder in the first degree.
Good.
He was held in the Lewisburg jail, and on April 22nd, 1987, a grand jury would be convened and reviewed the evidence. They determined there was enough there to charge Trout, even though he was maintaining his innocence. He would remain in jail until his trial, but the entire time he would brag to his cellmate saying there's no way he could be convicted of the crime due to the circumstantial evidence. Even going as far as saying when he got out, he would find someone else to marry. He's got to get those seven
wives.
Wife
number four? No, thank you.
He's going to become a wife.
And got to collect them all.
Yeah, he is. Bubba be waiting for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, in June of 1897, the trial began, and Mary Jane was going to be called to testify. Prosecutor John Preston would not bring up the dreams, so they believed Mary, but they did not want her to come off as insane. So they're like, we're just not going to touch it. We're not going to talk about it. And he brought up the findings of the autopsy. They found out Trout's, they talked about Trout's odd behavior after her death. And of course, the defense is like, we're bringing that up. We're bringing up the, the dreams. We're going to make her look a little loony.
Yep.
So she stuck to her story. She recounted all the details of Zona's visits. Mary Jane had even provided a list of 8 names of people that she had told about Zona's visits and what she was told before the autopsy was done. All 8 witnesses testified that Mary Jane had told them about the injuries, what her daughter had eaten that day, and the blood in the house before the autopsy was performed. Neither party objected to her testimony, so it was admitted in court as evidence on record.
Wow.
Nice.
This is the only time that a ghost has been accepted in a court record during a U.S. murder trial.
That's wild.
Of course, Trout, he's going to go over there, testify on his own behalf, deny everything, and he asked the jury to look into his face and determine if he was guilty. Your name's Trout. Yes. You're guilty.
You're automatically fishy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Before the jury would deliberate, the judge urged the jury to really just look at the facts of the case. And finally, on July 1st, 1897, after deliberating for an hour and 10 minutes, the jury decided he's guilty.
Fish fry!
It really only took them 10 minutes. The hour was while they were eating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 10 of the jurors voted for him to be hanged, but since it was not unanimous, he would be sentenced to life in prison. Trout would stay in Lewisburg prison until he could be transferred to Moundsville prison. And on July 11th, 1897, a mob of townspeople wanted to take matters into their own hands. So they all got together and were like, all right, if we break in, we can break him out and we can go take care of this, you know, on our own.
Yeah.
The sheriff was tipped off by the concerned citizens, and they would handcuff Trout. What they ended up doing is the sheriff would handcuff Trout to a deputy, took him to a cornfield, and hid him in a cornfield overnight until the sheriff could break up the mob and, like, talk him off the edge.
Oh, my God. Just let him have him, for God's sake.
Just let him have him. Fine. Well, on July 14th, Trout would finally be moved to Moundsville Prison, only lasting about 3 years. The flu epidemic would hit the prison, and on March 13th, 1900, Trout died. And no one would claim his body, and his family never visited.
Oh, darn.
And that is the story.
Of the fish man.
Of the fish man.
The awful, awful fish man. And that's the only case in U.S. history to ever have like a paranormal evidence admitted.
On record, yeah. 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 I heard about one, I think it was in Australia. I think it was on, there's a podcast called Sinisterhood, and I think it was them that was talking about it. And I think there's a case in Australia where they kind of had something. I'll have to look into it and see what it is.
A little bit.
Yeah. And another thing that's crazy is
that's where they really have kangaroo court.
They searched Trout's when they cleaned out his cell. He like kind of became an artist once he moved to the last prison, and he drew. And they still have it in that Greenbrier County, like in a museum. He drew 2 coffins, one with Zona in it, one with him in it, underneath a tree. And so they're like, did he do that?
Ew.
Or did she come and visit him and be like, you're getting got, buddy. Like, you're going to die.
You're not allowed to be married next to her.
No.
Fish man.
Absolutely not.
You dirty, dirty fish man.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah.
Ugh. He's a very interesting person.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for them and to reoffend.
How devastating for her mother to only want to protect her daughter and then to ultimately lose her under not obviously horrible circumstances, but then, you know, that they had the falling out and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was such a
thankfully she got justice at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times that doesn't happen.
Zona said, killing me without getting caught.
I'm telling my mom.
Telling my mom.
Yeah.
We're talking smack about you all night in our dreams.
And I think, if I remember right, Mary Jane, after he was sentenced and everything was settled, she never seen another apparition of Zona. She stuck to her story till the very end of her life, saying, you know, it happened. She was described as like a very down to earth, respectable woman. She wasn't like, you know, odd or anything. Right. So.
Yep. And sometimes all it takes is you to be brave enough to tell somebody.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
A mother's love, I'll tell you.
That's
what.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, thanks for joining us. Do you want to tell everybody they can find you?
Yeah. So I am Ghost Tracks Podcast on all social media. You can email me at ghosttrackspodcast@gmail.com if you have stories, or I don't know, maybe a ghost visited you and weirder things have happened. And then my website is ghosttrackspodcast.com.
Awesome. Well, you know where to find us, guys. We will put her links in the show notes. You can also find all of our socials in the show notes. We've got Facebook, TikTok. We've got a couple of Discord join people, whatever you want to call it.
Joined servers us this week. Or whatever
servers.
It's called
over there. Yeah, we've got some people over there, and we've gotten a couple of personal accounts on Discord. So send them over.
Heck yeah.
So thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And thank you, everybody.
Yeah, and go catch us over on Ghost Tracks.
Check us out on Remember That.
Yes.
Yeah, I just keep forgetting everything. It's late, guys. It's late.
We're everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. Just search us.
That's right.
All right. Well, we will see y'all next week. Join us where the guilty confess
and the ghostly never rest.
Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Thank you.